A very happy Tuesday evening to y'all. It is 6:07, and this is Your Money Matters. I'm John Hanson. Got a great show for you today. We're going to break down the inflation numbers that came out, but I really want to take it around and say, should that impact your savings plan? I mean, now we're getting to a point where inflation clearly isn't going anywhere for a little while. You've budgeted your retirement accordingly. If it's coming up, do you need to change some things? I'll ask Mark Hamrick that. He's the senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Also, Elizabeth Dunn, she's a professor who has written about the psychology of spending, why it makes us happy, why some of us overspend, and maybe some tips on how not to do that. And we'll also do What's Your Hustle for the second week. We'll find out what your side hustle is. I hope we have some good ones. It'll be a lot of fun. We'll answer the question of the day as well. You can get your answer in right now, 312-981-7200. Can you answer this? Fortune 500 companies, of course, are scattered all over the U.S. When you add up the total amount of revenue in each of the cities where they are, New York has the most. They're number one. Dallas has the most, second most. Chicago is number three. Can you give us either cities four or five in terms of Fortune 500 companies, a number of companies that they have in their hometowns? We'll get the answer to that, 312-981-7200, and plenty more coming up next. The Fortune 500 rankings by city in terms of how much revenue the Fortune 500 companies that exist in those cities gather. New York, probably no surprise, ranks in number one at about $1.7 trillion. Dallas is number two at just about $1 trillion. Chicago's number three, just behind. If you get me either cities four or five, I'm going to hook you up with a large WGN radio mug, 312-981-7200. Let's go to Jim. Jim, hello. How are you doing this evening?
Hi, doing well. Give me a second.
Okay. What's your guess you're fine. What city is in the top five, number four, number five? What's your guess?
Well, I have two guesses.
Okay,
I'll
sure.
I'll go with my first, Miami.
Okay, that is not in the top five. In fact, I don't even see it in the top 10, my friend.
Wow.
All right, what's next?
My second would be Honolulu.
That is also not on the top 10. I'm sorry, but thanks for playing, Jim. I appreciate the phone call.
All righty.
312-981-7200. I don't know. One of them makes sense to me when I kind of thought about it a bit. The other one, I was really surprised, cracked the top five for Fortune 500 revenue. We'll hopefully get an answer before the end of the show. Someone gets a mug, but let's continue on with the program and talk about inflation, everyone's least favorite topic these days. Mark Hamrick joins us right now, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, how are you doing this evening?
Doing very well, John. Good to be with you. Thank you. Hope you're doing well also.
I am. It was an interesting morning. We kind of saw the futures were booming because it looked like better news out of Ukraine. That's great. And then we get the wholesale prices up a big number, which indicates that inflation, at least some people think it's peaking. It's not certainly going down. What was your take from this morning's PPI number?
Well, it certainly was an ugly number, and I think that consumers, businesses, most of us who are sort of living our lives are experiencing this in real time. Obviously, for the producer price index is about what's going on at the wholesale level, so we don't necessarily have personal experience with that. But obviously, just last week, we had the consumer price index, which was essentially equally ugly, and so the question whether inflation is peaking is one that, you know, we've sort of been saying. I feel like it's Lucy and the football and Charlie Brown, right? Where it's like, this is the worst of it. This is the worst of it. Not unlike the pandemic, but and of course the two are related. But I think if we can move down a state or so from Illinois and go to Missouri, say, show me, right? I mean, from the show me state, I'd like to have some demonstration of this. And so I'm not yet willing to say that it's peaking until we see some more solid signs, because, you know, just because it has gone nearly as high as it can go or has gone recently doesn't mean it couldn't, under some other circumstances, continue to escalate.
Right. It increased 1% for the month. That's about double the expectation, although playing the expectation games always get you a little messed up. But when you take out food and energy and trade, the so-called core PPI, that was still way ahead. So even when you take out the volatile, you know, gas prices, home energy prices, things at the grocery store, it's not like those are the things that are only driving this inflation.
No, and that's sort of the point, you know, whether we're looking at the monthly jobs report or the inflation readings, you know, very often we can sort of do the old two-hand economist game and say on the one hand, yet on the other hand, and yet you really can't do that with these inflation readings because they are so consistent that way. You know, again, we're talking about in this latest read, the one you referenced today, wholesale inflation, goods prices were up 1.3%, energy prices up 2.5%, food prices up 1.6%. Services, and you think about the composition of our economy these days, services comprise essentially two-thirds of the index, and they were up 0.7%. That the biggest part of that, which may be related to COVID, was an increase in hospital outpatient care. So we're just going to have to continue to wrestle our way through this. And obviously, if we see true tensions boil over in the Russia-Ukraine situation, that will be felt among other areas in the energy complex. And obviously, we don't want to see further escalation there. So supply chain disruptions are sort of the major point of pain on this. And, you know, we heard some encouraging comments in recent days from American automakers, where they're saying they think they'll be able to have better access to, in particular, semiconductors and increase their output this year. And, of course, the biggest contributor, which continues to amaze me, I have to write it down so I can continue to believe it, the biggest contributor to consumer-level inflation is a 40% year-over-year increase in used car prices, which is just very difficult to process.
It is. It really is. It's incredible. Hey, let's take a quick break. I'm going to put you on hold because I really want to ask what that means for folks who maybe are near retirement, in retirement. They only have so much money set aside, and you got to make that last a lot longer. And if inflation's going up, if there needs to be any changes to that savings plan. But let's get a look at weather and traffic with Mary Vandeveld. Mark, you know, we were talking about inflation, number going up. At what point do people need to worry if they have a certain amount in retirement? They've just retired. They're hoping to stretch this as long as they can. They had a big budget plan for this. Or people that are near retirement. I mean, I guess, is it just wait and this will go down and this is just part of what we deal with? Or are there some changes people can make to avoid this?
Well, first of all, and thank you. It's a great question, John. First of all, you know, we do surveys of everyday Americans on a regular basis at Bankrate. And coming into the year, we asked Americans about what they thought their prospects for the year would be in their personal finances. Only about one in four thought it would be a good period for their personal finances. About four out of 10 thought their finances would be about the same. And the other said they'd likely be worse. And the number one, if you want to call it, impediment to improvement in their personal finances was indeed inflation. So I think people have a very good sense of how this affects them directly. And I'll just say, as a bit of an aside, one of the things I try to resist, and not that you are contributing to this, but broadly, it does happen. And that is, some people want to say, Mark, is the economy good or bad? And I'll say, well, it's sort of like the old saying in the commercial, your results may vary, right? Because, you know, if you're at the highest level of income, I have plenty of money socked away, it's largely irrelevant that inflation is so high. But if we're in the sort of, I would just say, the lower half of incomes, then that's where there's very little ability to make significant adjustments. And so people say, well, what should we do? Well, I would continue to say that the best practices for personal finances all the time are, if anything, all the more important right now. And so that's number one, to have a budget, know where the income is coming in from, what that number is, and where the money's going out. And that does require some record keeping. But the good news is, with mobile technology, our smartphones, and all of our accounts being listed in apps in there, we should be able to see that in our bank accounts. And then don't be among the Americans who have the number one financial regret, which is the failure to save for emergencies and the failure to save for retirements. Our just very recently published survey found that this is good news. 44% of Americans can pay an emergency expense of $1,000 or more from savings. The majority cannot do that. They'd have to find it somewhere else. But that's the highest number, John, that we've had in 8 years. We've been asking that question. So people are coming into this situation, let's just say inflation this year, which has actually been persistent for 12 months now. But they're coming into this year pretty well prepared with more savings. We just need to prioritize that. And then I would just say, you know, we all need to make adjustments with our behavior and our consumer habits. And that might mean, you know, chicken is up 10%, steak's up 17% year over year. we might need to substitute chicken and not only perhaps go for the most expensive cut, being a chicken breast and boneless chicken breast, but go for a thigh every now and
right.
then. They cook more thoroughly as the family cook, I could tell you.
They're anyway, way juicier so, anyway. So
exactly. Barbecue well, all that stuff. So,
yeah.
You know, I think we just have to be, you know, now is not the time to buy a car, you know, and if you can avoid that, if you can avoid changing apartments with rents going up so significantly, it's not a great time, broadly speaking, to buy a house. But as my colleague Greg McBride likes to say, people don't get married because wedding dresses go on sale. But we have to go ahead and live our lives. And in many cases, people are going to have to make those kind of decisions, despite the fact that inflation is so rampant.
Yeah, there is an opportunity here for if you have been someone that has been a little looser with your budget recently, maybe this inflation kicks you a little bit into high gear with making sure that you've got a budget that'll help save you not only now, but then when inflation goes back down, which of course we expect it will eventually. And, you know, you've got those better habits. And yes, chicken thighs in the air fryer, let me tell you, they are bone in too. Those are really, really good. I've moved away from chicken breast myself, Mark, but we digress. I want to talk about the Fed. I am getting such a headache over this debate over whether the Fed's going to raise it a half a point or a quarter point. Is it going to be up a full point by early July or late July? I mean, for the most part, for average Americans, I mean, does it really matter? I hate to ask it just a blank question, but I mean, does it really matter?
Well, I think the sort of very specific question that you're posing there is probably more relevant for those who are sort of treading very surgically with respect to managing money. What I would say is that the Fed really has one overarching priority here, and that is to get monetary policy to a more normal level. And it's completely positioned right now for a financial contraction, the likes of which we saw 2 years ago. I mean, they've been dialing down on the initially $120 billion in monthly asset purchases. Those are going to end in early March, but that simply means that that has ended. They have an $8.8 trillion balance sheet compared to four before the crisis, so that needs to be brought back into a more nominal range. And then interest rates, as you say, benchmark interest rates are at record low levels. Typically, that benchmark federal funds rate would be somewhere about 2-2.5%. So we would expect that to be going up over time. But here's the action item. We would normally say that people need to be paying off credit card debt on a monthly basis anyway. Don't allow those balances to carry over. I know life gets in the way. But that the average rate for a credit card, this is for the best qualified individuals, those with the best credit scores, payment record, et cetera, is 16.3%. Okay. And for others, it could be as high as 24, 25. This is a rate that will adjust exactly in correlation with what the Federal Reserve does. And so let's say in the next 60 days, they raise rates by a half point or 75 basis points or 0.75%. That 16.3 is going to go up by a half a percent, 0.75%. And over time, probably another 2-2.5% easily. So this is another call to action to say, you know, make credit card debt in terms of a persistent presence your target. Try to pay that down. I remember I asked Mark Cuban one time, what's the one bit of financial advice you'd give people being a billionaire yourself? And he said, you're not going to get a return on your money that's higher anywhere else than paying credit card debt down.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, everybody wants to kill it with crypto these days. Unfortunately, crypto has been killing them with the sort of 50% decline that they've been seeing.
Right.
But, you know, here's a case where you can get essentially a 16-17%, quote unquote, return on your money just by attacking that credit card debt. Make that a priority.
I love that. Yes. The more you can get away with that, the more you're going to be able to spend, or at least more you'll be able to save and put into other accounts. Mark, it was a great conversation. I appreciate you giving us some action items, giving us some homework. I appreciate it.
Very kind. I love to be on your great station. Big fan over many, many years, going back to my upbringing in the Midwest and in Southeast Kansas. And keep up the great work, John. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark. Senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Let's take a break, then hopefully get a question to the answer to the question of the day here on WGN. Hey, really quickly before weather traffic, let's get an answer to the question of the day. I hope we get it. Forbes, top 500 companies. If you add up all their wealth in the cities in which they are, New York comes in at number one, Dallas number two, Chicago number three. We're looking for four and five. We've had a lot of guesses. Let's go to Fran. Fran, what's your guess, Fran?
My guesses are Seattle, Washington, and Kansas City, Kansas.
Well, you got three guesses in there. Guess what? You got Seattle. That is correct. That is one of the guesses, all right? So you stay on the line, all right? Very good.
Okay.
Let's go to, I'm going to put Fran on hold. Do you mind putting Fran on hold, Iridian? I always mess that up, and then I end up hanging up on the person. Here we go. Let's go to Mary. So we've got Seattle. Hey. Mary, what's your guess for the next one?
Oh, was it Seattle the fourth? Let's see.
Well, Seattle was five. So what's four?
Oh, Seattle five. San Jose?
You're right. That's there you go. You seem shocked by your correct answer. I'm going to put you on hold as well, Mary. Congratulations. Fran and Mary are our winners tonight. All right, let's get a look at weather and traffic. Mary Vandeveld. We're going to chat with a professor from the University of British Columbia. We're joined, so happy to be joined by Elizabeth Dunn. Professor, thanks for hopping on the air with us here today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me.
And you have been a part of so many articles I've been reading. A great talk, you will. I watched you on YouTube for like 55 minutes today. All about the idea of spending money and the psychology and the habits behind it. So this is a very basic question that I know is a complex answer, but why do we like spending money so much?
Well, spending can be a lot of fun. It really can provide us with some happiness. But I think a trap that we sometimes fall into is overspending, because we get used to that little burst of happiness that we get from spending and maybe quickly find our bank accounts getting a little bit more drained than we planned.
If we spend more and more money, is it diminishing returns of happiness?
Yeah, so we do see that people don't get as much happiness from, you know, more and more spending or more and more income as they did with that sort of little bit. And so, you know, I would argue that if we restrict our spending a little bit, sometimes we can get more happiness from spending less by really focusing our attention on those, you know, special treats.
I'm trying to find things that are good to spend money. Like, obviously, there's certain needs we have in the world, right? And of course, you know, shelter, food. Okay. But what are some splurges or some spending that is shown to not only give us that high, that good feeling, but also have good lasting effects for us and our futures?
Yeah. So one of the ways that we can get pretty lasting happiness from our money is by using money to buy experiences. So you can think about trips or concerts or special meals. Buying experiences seems to provide more happiness and actually more lasting happiness than buying material things like, you know, shoes, clothes, gadgets.
And I also read that you wrote to, when you buy an experience, to pay now and experience later. Why is that, instead of doing the experience and then paying afterwards?
Yeah, so there's a lot of benefits associated with delaying gratification. So, for example, our science team at Happy Money conducted a study where we examined the link between delaying gratification and people's overall well-being and financial situation. And we found that people who are pretty good at delaying gratification, who focus on their future selves, have much less credit card debt compared to people who really focus on, you know, getting what they want right away. So delayed gratification can be a pretty good strategy for keeping spending under control. And by delaying gratification, by sort of paying up front and consuming later, we can enjoy that pleasure of anticipation of knowing this good thing lies in the future.
What about buying things to, I guess, there's no other better way to put it, you know, services for other people to do things for you that you don't want to do. I know that some people find that to be extravagant, and of course, it depends on everyone's individual budget, but is buying time a good thing?
Yeah, so this was a long-standing debate that my husband and I had about whether it was a wise use of money to buy our way out of some of the things we hated doing, like spending our Saturday afternoons cleaning our house. And so I've actually now conducted pretty extensive research showing that using money to buy time, to buy ourselves out of these dreaded tasks, does in fact yield happiness. And so I would argue that although it seems extravagant, using even small amounts of money to get rid of some of our most dreaded tasks can be really a pretty smart and productive way to promote our happiness.
I feel like a lot of us say, well, that extra hour that I save from not cleaning, I'm going to use it to earn more money, X, Y, or Z. But really, it can even just be the rest, right? The clearing of the head that then will make you more productive. It just doesn't quite show up on a balance sheet, X, Y, Z.
That's right. So if you're going to use money to buy time, I would suggest thinking about that time as a kind of windfall and carefully considering how you want to use it, and maybe using it in a way to do an activity that really makes you happy, like maybe going for a walk with a friend you haven't seen in a long time, or getting a chance to engage in your favorite sport that you might otherwise feel like you didn't have enough time to do.
And investing in others or buying for causes that you believe in, is that a good return, rate of return for happiness?
Yeah, so this is near and dear to my heart, and I have long argued, and we have a bunch of studies now showing that people who use money to benefit others actually end up happier than people who just use their money to benefit themselves. And so, you know, this doesn't mean that every time we spend money on others, it always automatically makes us happier. But in particular, if we can find ways to use our money to benefit others where we can really see the impact that we're having, and we feel a real sense of connection with the person or the cause that we're helping, then we can expect a pretty substantial impact on our own happiness.
Do you have any advice for people out there that do spend too much? They know it. I guess knowing it's part number one, but to try and curb behavior when they know they're spending excessively on some of these things that don't ultimately bring too much happiness.
Yeah, so one big piece of advice is just to track what you spend and how it makes you feel. You can actually decide what's worth it to you and what's not. So pay attention to how purchases affect your mood to identify those purchases that are worth spending money on and those that aren't. And so this is a way to both cut back on your spending, you know, curb overspending, and also maybe do a better job at looking out for your own happiness.
Yeah. One of the talks I saw you give, I was so fascinated by this number of income, where it is that we start getting diminishing returns of happiness from how much more money we make. And obviously, inflation has probably changed that just a little bit. But what? It's right around like $75,000 that once you make that, of course, extra money is nice, but it starts to mean less and less the more you go up and up.
That's right. And so the wealthier you get, basically, the less of an impact that more income tends to have on your happiness. And in particular, I would say if you're making, you know, about $75,000 to $100,000 U.S., additional income probably isn't going to have much of an impact on how much you laugh or smile on a typical day. Now, it might make you think, you know, a little bit more highly of your life. So people who are making tons of money tend to rate their lives very positively, perhaps in part because they're living up to this cultural standard that really values wealth, but it's not necessarily delivering that impact in terms of just day-to-day joy.
That's great stuff. Professor Dunn, we covered a lot of ground really quickly. I hope to have you on again so we can dive deeper into some of this, okay?
All right, terrific. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's Professor Elizabeth Dunn, professor of the University of British Columbia. And also, you heard her mention that she works as the chief science officer for the financial technology firm Happy Money. All righty, that's going to just about do it here for Your Money Matters here on this wonderful Tuesday evening. We're taking you right up to Blackhawks Live with Joe Brand, who had the best social media video I've seen in a long time. You don't follow Joe Brand on social media, you're making a lot of mistakes out there. He does these preview videos for Blackhawks Live. And this latest one, it was a little disturbing. It was a little weird, but it made me laugh. And knowing Joe Brand, I loved it. And you should make sure you check that out, too. That's coming up next. We'll be back with another Your Money Matters tomorrow. In fact, we're going to be chatting a lot of things, including some advice for your retirement savings accounts with a great financial advisor. We'll get to that tomorrow and plenty more coming up. And first, let's get a break into the newsroom after this break.